We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat, followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars, too. It's... or maybe it's more like... altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to HD's A View from the Stands podcast, a series in which we'll discuss everything sports in the time of absolutely no sports. I'm Aditya Iyer, and with me is the national sports editor of Hindustan Times, Rudraneel Sengupta.
So when we were thinking about this episode, which is basically about movies and sports, we thought, okay, well, let's do an episode on sports and movies. And then we started brainstorming and thinking about what we're going to talk about, and we started drawing out a list of movies that we like. And we realized, man, we can't do it in one episode. Sports and movies, I mean, this needs like a series of episodes. So we just from the top of my head, the first names that came on: Raging Bull, Million Dollar Baby, Invictus, Pan Singh Tomar, Dangal, Foxcatcher. It goes on and on. What are some of yours, Aditya?
Oh, tons of them. You've named a couple already. Foxcatcher, certainly. But I've got like a bunch of boxing films that I really like, right? And right on top of it sits Rocky. Beautifully. I mean, it's not just my favorite sports film, boxing film. It's my favorite film of all time. But we'll come to it.
Great. So let's do that, right? Let's just talk about boxing films. Right? Not sports and movies, but just boxing films. And then we'll, maybe next episode, we'll do other movies. We'll do Moneyball, Invictus, other great movies like that. But let's keep this one just to boxing, because there's been so many good films on boxing.
I agree.
And like we were discussing last time when we were talking about literature, there's something about boxing and the arts. Like boxing, this primal violence, this kind of man against man nature of the sport. For some reason, it just evokes great passion in people, and it's been represented beautifully in literature, and it has in songs and in movies. I mean, some of the greatest movies of all time. Forget sports movies; these are movies that transcend that label. Our boxing, Raging Bull, is an example.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like I was saying, okay, so if we're gonna do the boxing podcast, I cannot help but start with Rocky that I gave a very brief introduction to already. It's my favorite movie, the 1976 one that launched the series. It's my favorite series. Creed is my favorite spin-off. I don't do, movie locations and stuff like that, but I have also gone to the Philadelphia Museum of Art, better known as the Rocky Steps, and climbed up and down while listening to Bill Conti's music. Like, as one of my friends put it. So I didn't tell him, this guy lives in Philadelphia, and I went there specifically to run up and down the steps. And I finished doing it, and I gave him a call, and I said, dude, you can meet me here. He's like, why are you there? There are a lot of jackasses running up and down all day. Yeah.
But was it hard? I mean, are there lots of steps? Did you lose some weight?
There are, yeah. I think I must have dropped like a couple of pounds. It was also quite hot when I was there in early September a few years ago. But, man, like, he's right, because there are so many of us jackasses over there at the same time, listening to the same song. No, okay, wait. A lot of people listen to Eye of the Tiger, but I was listening to the original Bill Conti soundtrack. Now, wait, very quickly on Rocky. For those, I don't know how anybody in the world can possibly not know about this series, but it's about Rocky Balboa. This was written by Sylvester Stallone and played by him. He's known as the Italian Stallion. He's the struggling Italian-American boxer in Philadelphia. And he gets a chance a fluke chance to fight for the heavyweight title against Apollo Creed. And part one is about that title bout. Part two is about the rematch with Apollo Creed. Part three is about Rocky taking on Clubber Lang, played by Mr. T. Part four is about, in the peak of the Cold War, it's Rocky versus this guy called Ivan Drago.
By this time, even the most committed Rocky fan should accept that the movies are going down the drain.
What? No, wait, listen, boss, I really take offense to this, okay? Like, at a very serious level. I mean, okay, wait, so for all those people who think that, like Rudra Neil, who think that this is a frivolous, and not even like a biopic, like a completely fictional account of boxing, in 1976, the greatest underdog story of all time, pulled off the greatest underdog move, which is it won the Academy Award for Best Picture, beating along the way All the President's Men, Taxi Driver, Bound for Glory, and Sidney Lumet's Network. Now, okay, wait.
The fact that it beat Taxi Driver, like drown in shame, but
it could have beaten Godfather Part 2 for all I care.
But this is the original movie. The original movie is very good. Stallone. If there is one problem that I have
Boss,
with the
Rocky V, where he does a street fight. Rocky VI, which is eponymously known as Rocky Balboa, where he takes on Mason Dixon, the reigning heavyweight champion, and he's some 55 years old. That is great. That should be Godfather Part 2.
Yeah. What we need is Rocky Part 22. But
I'll be watching
that. But if there's a problem I had with Rocky, is that for all, this is one of the greatest or the most popular boxing movie series ever made.
Yeah.
But the boxing, the technical aspect of the boxing itself is not very well done.
You think so?
Fights are not realistic. Yeah. Okay. I mean, which is one thing that if you look at the spin-off in Creed, Michael B. Jordan playing Creed, he is actually, when you look at his training sequences, those are really, really like real-life boxing. I mean, there's a movement. Just from looking at the movement, it will be very difficult to say that Michael B. Jordan is an actor and not a boxer.
Excellent.
He hits all his punches leads with his shoulder.
Yeah.
It comes from his hips, which does not really happen with Stallone Rocky.
Yeah, okay, but you must also understand that this was predominantly shot between the 70s and the 90s. And flashy action sequences, man, that's what they were going for. Which is why Dolph Lundgren, one of the greatest action stars of all time, along with Stallone, Lundgren plays Ivan Drago. The reason why they hired guys like this was for the film was to make it an action film. It wasn't just a boxing film. I'll defend this till the day I die, right? And also, Creed is the greatest spin-off. I love it. Michael B. Jordan, as you mentioned, known for playing Wallace in the greatest TV show of all time, The Wire. Rocky, by the way, is the Wire of filmmaking, man.
I reserve comments on that.
So Creed 2, by the way, just to wrap up on Rocky, Creed 2 has Ivan Drago's son, Victor Drago, taking on Apollo Creed's son, Adonis Creed, played by Michael B. Jordan. But the beauty is Ivan Drago has killed Apollo Creed, right, in the ring.
Right.
This is the revenge match of all revenge matches. And by the way, the first Creed which Stallone really had to be hard-sold to produce and act in, won him a nomination, Best Supporting Actor in 2016, which he lost out to Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies. Unfortunate, because everyone thought this was going to be Rocky Balboa's year.
His moment, yeah, I'll say.
Well.
So let me talk about a movie that could have been like the female version of Rocky. And it sets up to be like that. And I'm talking about Million Dollar Baby.
Clint Eastwood.
This was one of my favorite filmmakers. Because there's a lot of, sometimes his films are not so good, but okay. this is at the time of when he was making Unforgiven and Mystic River.
Absolutely.
And great movies. movies, and Million Dollar Baby is a sublime movie, which begins very much like a sort of cliched kind of more of a popular fun kind of thing, which is this girl comes into this gym run by a very gruff old man, and she
who's played by Morgan Freeman.
No, he Clint Eastwood runs the gym. Morgan Freeman is actually this former one-eyed boxer who's his best friend. Who also runs the gym with him. He's kind of a gym sweeper, actually. He doesn't really run the gym at this point. And Eastwood and Freeman have nobody else. They're like, you know, they're lonely men. They have each other, but they're very rough with each other. They can't, like, you know, really express themselves. They are very macho. And you have this girl who comes in, and Hilary Swank, amazing actor. And she comes in and she says, okay, I want to be a boxer, and I'm not leaving the gym till you take me on. And you know, here's Clint Eastwood doing everything he can to dissuade this girl from taking up boxing. And he says, no, you know, I don't take on girls and things like that. And it's very cliche, but it's a lot of fun at this point. And then this movie builds it up, and, you know, it takes you on this, like, kind of almost childish little fun ride. And then it brings everything crashing down. I'm not going to, for anybody who hasn't seen it, I don't want to talk about what happens and give a spoiler, but everything comes crashing down. And
I think anyone who hasn't seen it by now deserves to have it spoiled for them. Go for it!
No, I still don't feel like it. I wouldn't want it spoiled for me. I mean, and the thing is that there is so much grief in this movie suddenly. And it feels that at some point it feels like it'll almost overwhelm you. I mean, I have to confess that I haven't done with this movie what I do with movies I usually like, which is rewatch them, and I haven't had the heart to rewatch it because I know what happens, and it's very, very sad, but it's also very tender and very beautiful, and it's a sublime piece of movie making, and it's based on one of six short stories written by this boxing cutman called FX Tool. The collection is called Rope Burn: Stories from the Corner. It's a great book on boxing. So here's another plug: you can go read Rope Burn.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. It's a fictional account, right?
Yeah.
So, unlike the next film that I'm going to mention, which is Cinderella Man, it's not a fictional account. It's, you know, a biopic based on this boxer called James J. Braddock, played by Russell Crowe. It's a Ron Howard film from 2005. And it is just glorious because it's based, during the time of the Great Depression in America. And what Braddock has to do to kind of just, like, keep a living. You know, he's a longshoreman, and he's a boxing career that's been shelved a long time ago. And he gets back into it and, of course, beats this Jewish-American boxer called Max Baer at the end. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything. This is history, right? But now, the only problem with this film for a lot of people was that they had to villainize Max Baer to make Braddock look good in the film. And it didn't go down too well with a lot of boxing aficionados, right? Like, because this guy was like a genuinely nice guy, and they make him seem like this really loathsome womanizer who happened to, at one point, kill a guy in the ring called Frankie Campbell. But and he was arrested for it also for culpable homicide, but got away because it was obviously not intentional, and this happened before. But in the film, they have the guy playing Max Baer, you know, like boasting about the fact that, like, he can take lives at will. And he also tells Braddock's wife, played by Renee Zellweger in this film, that, you know, he will be much more of a man with her in bed than Braddock. And totally uncalled for. Because this guy was like he was just like a really schmutzy sweetheart, right? Like, he was a nice guy. And his family cannot believe that they did that with him. This happened before with, you know, the guy who plays the coach, played beautifully by Philip Seymour Hoffman in Moneyball, was also really surprised that he came across that way.
Right. But what do you like about this movie?
about Cinderella, man?
That's right.
Oh, always, always rags to riches, man. Like, and here it's not even two riches. It's just rags to slightly better rags. And, but Ron Howard is a fabulous director, but I mean, right. He also has this peak Hollywood bullshittery in him, right? Because when Howard and the beautiful Russell Crowe collaborated for Beautiful Mind, which is a biopic on the mathematician John Nash, they did something very similar. They basically just airbrushed John Nash's homosexual tendencies completely. I mean, right. he wasn't gay, but he could have been bisexual. I mean, he most certainly was bisexual. And they didn't talk about that aspect of his life at all. I mean, because it wouldn't go down with the American audience in the early 2000s, which is just, you know, right. A guy like Howard should know better, man, I think.
Yeah, but you're talking about grit, right? That grit and glory.
Oh, yeah.
This is what boxing, what makes boxing such a great thing to base films on. And so I'm going to end on what I think is one of the greatest films ever, everybody thinks it's one of the greatest films ever made. And, you know, and it transcends the genre of being a sports film. In fact, it's not really a sports film. It uses boxing as only an excuse to talk about other things. And I'm talking about Scorsese's probably greatest movie made by Scorsese, which is Raging Bull. Which is really about this a nobody. He's a middleweight champion from between 1949 and 51, who once took down Sugar Ray Robinson. So he had his own iconic standing in the Italian community in the U.S.
Yeah. You haven't mentioned his name, by the way.
Jake LaMotta.
Yeah, thank you. Played by?
Jesus. And De Niro, Robert De Niro, who else?
Yeah.
And De Niro is the one who actually pushed Scorsese to make this film. This was a very bad time for Scorsese.
That's right. I thought Joe Pesci did it.
Yes, Joe Pesci as well plays LaMotta's brother.
Yeah, I thought he pushed Scorsese to make some. Anyway,
it was a project actually.
Oh,
I see. De Niro loved the book written by Jake LaMotta, which was kind of autobiography, and he pushed relentlessly for it. Scorsese at this time was not having a good time. He had just released New York, New York, which was critically panned. It had failed at the box office. He was very upset. He was on a lot of drugs. Rocky had just been released, so there was this example of a boxing movie that was doing really well critically as well as in the box office.
Yeah.
So he really didn't want to take on a boxing movie, and De Niro kept pushing him till a point where there's this like, you know, thing that happens, which is kind of like my dream, my own fantasy, which is that De Niro and Scorsese, they retire to a hotel in the Caribbean island, and they meet no one for a few weeks, and they just go over the script, you know, and they finish the script for Raging Bull, which is kind of the thing I always want to do.
Wow.
So this is about a violent, masochistic, misogynistic man. Who's emotionally stunted, this is about men who can talk only through violence, whose self-worth is expressed only by what they can physically do to each other, you know, how much damage they can cause. To borrow a phrase from Hemingway, this is about men without women. Yeah. Even though there are women in their lives, you know, but these women are just, they are very two-dimensional. They don't really know how to be with a woman apart from looking at the woman as a sexual object. And this is about the unraveling of this man, okay, through jealousy, through low self-esteem, through obsession with sexuality, about his own insecurities with it. And it's a sublime movie. It's a beautiful movie. And you see the boxing sequences are almost incidental, though they're filmed in this completely strange, operatic way where it's all about the blood, and it's completely unrealistic actually, but there's something really brutal and very, very intimate about those sequences, and they're interspersed with these horrible family sequences where nobody gets along with anybody, and it's just about violence, it's just about anger, and everything that is said is an insult. And it's one of the grittiest, most brutal depictions of
The film for which De Niro won his only Best Actor? He won Best Supporting Actor for Godfather Part 2, which we've mentioned a few times in this podcast. But
you know, I don't know. You can tell me this. Is it?
I think it was Raging Bull. I mean, yeah, you know, but
when a film is this good, you can't really bother about whether it got an award or didn't get an award. I mean,
De Niro. Dino's finest role, I think, right? And
probably a lot of people do. He's done so many fine roles, but
And sticking to biopics and the director actor collaboration having to convince each other, Michael Mann's Ali went down the same way. This was made in 2001, where Will Smith didn't want to play Muhammad Ali, but he just couldn't, live up to it. And Michael Mann did all he could to convince him, and it did not work out. And also because, Mann was basically hiring... This was based loosely on When We Were Kings, which is the Oscar-winning documentary on Rumble in the Jungle. And they had hired real boxers to play George Foreman and Sonny Liston and Joe Frazier. In fact, the guy who played Sonny Liston was Michael Bent, a former WBO heavyweight champion. And Smith really, there's only so much that you can do with method acting, and he knew he could pile on the pounds and put on the muscle, but he really wasn't convinced that he could be Ali. Till Michael Mann got Ali to give Smith a call. And and this line is beautiful because Smith goes like, just give me one reason why you think I can live up to it. And Ali goes, son, because you're almost as pretty as me.
That's the Ali. Yeah.
That's it. He did the film. It was fabulous. And this is Michael Mann, who's made The Insider, who's made Heat. This is his foray into a sports film, and of course, had to be a boxing one.
This is the one film on your list I haven't seen. I'm just going to.
Oh, you haven't? Right, highly recommended, man. I mean, very, very good. In fact, this the famous Ali Liston fight, which lasted I think a minute and 44 seconds, which ended with what was considered the photograph of the century, right? With Ali towering over Liston and asking him to get up and fight some more. The scene in the movie ends with the photograph being taken. I mean, I perhaps can't do justice to how beautifully this was shot by Mann, but it was shot as beautifully as every other Mann film that we enjoy so much.
I'm going to go see it right now.
Please do. You won't regret it. So, more on sports movies next week. We're not ending this. I think this one is going to be slightly hard to end.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye.
This was an episode of A View from the Stands. Do like and follow us on @HTSmartcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or write to us on podcasts@hindustantimes.com. You can listen to more podcasts by logging on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production, brought to you by HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat, followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars, too. It's... Or maybe it's more like... Altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.